Okay, thank you, Roger and Thomas, for inviting me here. So, the title is clear. And I will simply, well, difficulty was this way. We come back to the origin, to the first session of this meeting. We have 25 years of implementation gap between what the economists say about climate change, carbon pricing, and the reality. And at some point in time, we can say either the others don't understand what we mean, or something is missing in our mental map. Second diagnosis, we are in a very adverse context with huge economic turbulences, and there is a temptation of postponing action up to the end of this period. This is why I don't believe that there will be any serious climate action without convincing the climate agnostic policymakers who simply are concerned by other priorities like unemployment, debt. And this raises a lot problem of a big problem of tragedy of horizons. This invented by McCartney, in which we have the short-term constraints and long-term goals. Short-term constraints, well, for example, let us pick the example of negotiating the carbon prices. I'm okay with Martin Weisman that in principle can do that because if you recycle duly the carbon tax, we can achieve an agreement without a lot of huge transfers with most countries. But when you want to negotiate a carbon tax, carbon price, you have to renegotiate the social contract in each country. Because you have to reform the social security systems, but you have also to reform, for example, the real estate market, because the real estate market determines the urban forms and determines the mobility needs. And then, if you want to raise the carbon prices, this will be at the pace necessary to renegotiate the social contracts in any country. And where comes the tragedy of horizons is that we don't have time to do that. Why that? Because in the emerging economies, the people are building now, not later, now, most of their infrastructures, transportation, building, transport, and energy systems. And $50 per ton of carbon cannot be supported by the Indian economy because this doubles the price of cement, the cost of cement. And $50 of carbon will never be enough to stop the urban sprawl in India, China, and other countries. So how to solve this contradiction? I come back, that's the problem of integrating the story between the short term and the long term. I come back here because we have to say that we have to work with the climate agnostics. Stay here. When you read the journals, you have great people, big names, who talk about secular stagnation, depression economics, gap between potential growth and real growth. At the root of that is Bernanke, Larry Summers, who talk about a chronic excess of savings over investment. We have too much savings and we don't invest enough. Okay, fine. And we have the other diagnosis that, well, the emerging economies, because of the Asian crisis in the past, they need to accumulate a lot of reserves in foreign currencies to have a war chest, and this led them to a too much export-oriented strategy. And this creates a risk of currency gold war in the world. That's what you hear from the macroeconomists. So, two strands of literatures. How to bridge the gap between these two concerns? Then, we have to integrate the horizon. I come back to what Michael Grubbs said yesterday. We, in the energy field, climate field, we need to make strategic investment, the edge there, okay? And the edge investment will not depend upon purely the markets, because we have to do something to anticipate the long term. You know, I look at the origin of that, the link between this and the financial crisis. Is this here? We reason as though it was possible to select projects in merit order. Most profitable will be selected and not the others. But Look at what happens. Assume that we have the project E and B, and with a carbon tax, A has an expected value higher than B. Well, first we have a problem, because the carbon tax, we have an uncertainty about the capacity of the governments to really implement it over the long run. $100, okay, fine, I will do that, but I'm not so sure. Second, we have a problem with the uncertainty about the oil prices. Over the past 8 years, the implicit carbon price in the price of oil passed from $50 to $380. You can never expect to mitigate this type of uncertainty only with carbon pricing. So this explains why the people will not invest only if you put carbon pricing on the market. Because what? Look at now, A and B. In this type of project, you have the problem that you can make mistakes, uncertainty about the cost of implementing the project, right? If you select B, well, you make a mistake. The engineers are not good enough. You make less money. Now, if you pick A, with large upfront cost, you make a mistake. Then you approach some kind of a danger line here, in which your banker will say, oh, yeah, guy, you make a mistake. Then I lend you money, but with high interest rate. And your shareholder will say, oh, I don't believe you. I put my money elsewhere. And then you can have a deep decrease, a drop in the value of the firm. Then you will not invest here. What I describe here, for those I don't comment because I don't have time, but there are some Americans there, okay? This is exactly what happened when the explanation behind the drop, the failure of the nuclear programs in the US after 1974. All the industry said, well, I don't want any nuclear power, too costly, too large upfront, I don't want to take the risk, because of the value of my firm. Then, once you have that in mind, what is the solution? I don't see what is the solution. What is the problem to be solved? Problem to be solved is that one. We have to move down this danger line, that the role of finance, for low carbon investment. We have to redirect now and not later, now, the large saving pools available towards infrastructure investments, possibly low carbon. We have to increase the efficiency of sectoral policies and hedge against the fragmentation of climate finance. We have two talks here. We have a lot of imagination about climate finance. We can do that, but how to avoid the arbitrariness of the choices? We need something which makes that we move down this decision line with something which is connected with a notional price of carbon. And then I discussed with Michael Grubb yesterday, and he says that the English sometimes use better the French word when it is better than the English one. So we call that in French a pré-directeur du carbon. Then we need to avoid the fragmentation and the arbitrariness to insert pré-directeur du carbon in this process. And hopefully, that's the macroeconomic side, can say now we will simply try, thanks to that, because we reduce uncertainty on investment, try and contribute to reduce the gap between propensity to save, propensity to invest, and will be good even for the macroeconomy. How can this can be done? I'll just give very quickly this to simply say that a lot of agents are potentially interested, but we need governments and central banks and all the intermediaries. Then I will explain the process. I still have time to make a metaphor here. Prefer that. In the past, when you look at the railway revolution, what we did? We had guarantee on the investments, but we had assets. When investors invested in lines between two cities, even though the line was not that profitable, they gained before they had the assets, and the asset was the land, both sides of the line. What is the equivalent now? What can we say? We cannot secure really the investment uncertainty unless we put that up front. What are the type of assets we can build, which is the equivalent of that? Okay? And the mechanic, and this one mechanic, other, because I talk about that many times in many places, but one concept, and then this can be absolutely discussed. You imagine that what we need. We need first the government. We say the asset is the avoided carbon. The avoided carbon is the asset, like the land. But this has a value, not left to the market, that's the difference, that the prix directeur. We agree that this has a value. So quantity and prices. If you have that, you can say we have a projected developer. Needs 100 euro or dollar. And say, well, okay, we have a system in which you need 100, you will repay to me, the bank, 50 in cash. You will give me 50 in carbon certificates. Why the bank can do that? Because the bank can say, well, the central bank will accept that. And what will do the central bank? It will put that in the balance sheet and it will become a carbon asset. There will be an asset swap. And this will appear in the balance sheet of the bank like gold and like the foreign currencies. This comes to a money creation based on the creation of real wealth, okay? If you have this system, to make the metaphor, you can say to people, well, instead of, for example, the people generating carbon assets because generating assets because, for example, the supermarket chains, when they invest in the cities, they create assets that the land be, okay, that they do. Instead of doing that, the government says, well, this is the real asset. We want that because we have a value on that. The merit of the system is, next slide here, I'm sorry, okay, is that this works only if you can redirect the savings, because the financial intermediaries will be capable to attract the private savings. Because they can play about they can produce carbon-based bonds, they can play with the pooling of the risks, and there's a huge leverage effect there. To be very simple, because I told that to my son, so I'm permitted by him to quote him. My son is an engineer for Paribas on the quality of the internet system, the safety of the internet systems. He has two houses, 37 years, and he said, oh, I bought an apartment in Paris. Why that? He wants to put his money somewhere. I hope that thanks to this system, the bank will say, okay, you can save the world with a carbon-based bond, and you will invest there. That's the big problem to redirect the real finance, okay? So you have this system. Once you have that, obviously what is needed is the key of the system, that the quantity, I will not develop a lot on that, I can respond to questions. Eh? But the problem is the value, and I come back to the Martin Weissman story. I think we can negotiate this value. Why that? Because there's a sum of the social cost of carbon, the perception of the climate damages, and the co-benefits. And the problem is that China, for example, can say, well, I will accept that because my coal problem and my health problem due to local production. The Brazilians can say, well, I have to accept that because I want to save the alcohol program. So the people can accept the system for various reasons. And I discussed that with Indians, with Chinese and others, and I can tell you that's possible. We have a corridor of prices in which you can accept that. So now the problem is, in terms of theory, what is the merit of the system? That we have to renegotiate the today implicit social contracts. And what do we do to say, well, we have the assets, which is the real commitment of the countries, of the government, who say, well, that's credible, I give you the money now. You can have the certainty now, okay? And obviously, this will help, in the long run, to upgrade the carbon prices for two reasons. First, we, for the same carbon price, there will be more investment, will accelerate technical change, and makes the and you can respect the pace of renegotiation of the social contracts without postponing the hard investments. Okay, so at the end we have to work about the convergence between the value attached to the prix directeur and the real carbon prices. I will shift there to say that's a way in which we can convince the carbon agnostics to follow, because that climate transition is not a problem of huge additional investment, only 0.5% of the GDP. We make simulations with the figures of the International Energy Agency. That's more a problem of redirection. Second, you can bridge the gap between propensity to save and propensity to invest. You can organize north-south flows, which is online with the so-called Cancun's paradigm shift, in which the criteria for the CBDR is no longer to share the pie, but to accelerate the transition and to help the countries to take the good bifurcations. You will make the emerging economies less forced to grow. Why that? Because the Chinese, for example, others will reinvest more domestically than putting their money abroad. And we discuss that with Chinese. Then we can, in practice, you create a reserve currency, because we can use these carbon assets as a currency for the interbank payments, which is interesting for some large emerging economies. We discuss that with them. So I will conclude to say some good news here, because we developed that since years. And we have published a declaration that we have been signed by a lot of colleagues in 72 lead authors of the IPCC. Roger and Thomas and others here have signed that. I insist on the fact that it's the result of the AODV and Terram Partem. That's my Latinist fancy, which means I understood language of the others. This proposal was supported mostly by the Brazilians and Sub-Saharan Africa, which insists that we want something resembling a predictor to carbon in the convention. And the good news is that in Bonn, you have here the draft decision put in the document, which means that you have the request from, at the origin, the G77, to have something resembling what we need here, the price, agreement of price, in the working to three of the agreement, which is devoted in practice to immediate action. We'd like to have that in the core of the document, but at least it's there. So I stop here. I think I'm on time. Simply, I have the time to. Well, you will not have time to look at that. But simply to say that what is there, that's the start of a process. We have 48 countries who have participated to this effort. We have large countries in Africa. We are not pushing for progressing in direction of a new climate finance approach based on some economic rationality, because they know, experience that we can make a lot of arbitrary choices if we don't have this carbon price embedded in the decisions. So I hope this is good news, and we'll stop we'll reduce the emission gap. And then Roger told me, Jean-Charles, be short. I always, the repetition not to extend my time, which is false. And now I have some minutes some seconds to say to thank you for this invitation, and I respect my time. Thank you, Jean-Charles.